for Kentuckery. The main outdoors is waiting for all of us to see. The mountains, lakes, and rivers, the wildlife, and the woods are just outside your doorway. So get outside and find it in the main outdoors. Fishing, hunting, winter, spring, summer, and fall. If it happens in the main outdoors, they talk about it all. Just tune in your radio to 103.9. Jim and Paul and Bob and Matt are your outdoors hotline. Each Sunday night at 7 on WVOM. To find out what is happening, just listen to the radio to the main outdoors.
Welcome to the main outdoors. Here's tonight's host, V. Paul Reynolds.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. Good evening, one and all, and welcome to Maine Outdoors, Maine's longest-running outdoor talk radio program. You know we are totally dedicated to the Maine outdoors, and we invite you to join us tonight. We have a toll-free statewide number, and that number is
1-800-966-1039, and you must dial the whole number, Paul, even if you're local.
Yes, sir. Hey, hasn't this been a nice run of September weather?
I don't like it. It's too warm and it's too dry.
No kidding.
Oh, desperate dry.
Oh, it's been so nice down to the lake.
One of your guests was telling me tonight that his lawn is nothing but dirt.
Oh, down at the lake, we had a nice south wind coming in.
Lucky you down at the lake, of course.
Don't you? I wish we could, you know, put this in a canning jar the way Alice does her tomatoes.
Isn't that wonderful, huh?
Pop that open in December sometime.
I live in town.
I know you do.
I know. I've been desperate with the air conditioners.
Okay. Well, it's going to get colder next week, so you'll be happy about that.
I hope so. Colder.
You bet. Hey, we have a great program lined up tonight. I'll introduce our three studio guests in just a moment, but first the crew who make this possible every week. The man now behind the toggle switches and the gauges in there, the Raspberry Baron of Orrington, who used to be, we just found out last week, he used to be a water bomber for the Forestry Department. My friend Scotty Bates.
Yes, good evening, Paul, and everybody in there. Boy, it is a nice, been beautiful weather, and I love it. I'm sorry,
Bob. You like it. See, Bob, he likes it.
Yeah, right.
How about Jim? Does Jim like it?
I love it, and I'll tell you what. I don't know why you'd want to take it to Florida with you in the wintertime. We want you to send that Florida weather back up here.
Well, maybe we can can some of that and ship it up to you.
Oh, that'd be great Christmas.
All right. Anyway, nice to have the crew here, and we appreciate all they do every week, week after week after week, year after year, and without them, we wouldn't have a show. Oh, I almost forgot, my esteemed co-host. If I forgot you, Bob, you'd hit me with a wet noodle. He's a registered master guide. He's written some fantastic books on fishing.
Thank you.
My friend and co-host, Bob Lehman.
Appreciate it. Proud to be here, Paul. Thank you.
Nice to have you here, sir, as it is
every
week.
Alrighty then.
Our guests tonight, I'll introduce them in order from left to right. These gents are representing the Down East Maine Land Conservation Movement. They each have their own special roles, and we'll talk about that in just a moment. But first, I'll introduce them. First is the Vice President of the National Conservation Fund, Mr. Tom Duffus. Did I say that right, Tom?
Tom Duffus, yes.
All right. Nice to have you here, Tom. And to Tom's immediate left, do I have that right? Yeah. This fellow is the Forest Program Director for the Nature Conservancy, Mark Berry.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Nice to have you here, Mark. And we had you on a couple years ago, I think.
Yes, it was a pleasure. I'm looking forward to it again.
Yeah, so you're a professional broadcaster now, so we're expecting big things from you, Mark.
Second time.
All right. And with him is another experienced seasoned fellow who's been with us before. He is the Executive Director of the Blue Hill Heritage Trust, Hans Carlson. Hans, nice to have you here.
Good evening. Good to be here. Thanks.
Nice to have you here. And we have a really interesting program tonight. There's a lot of good things happening, a lot of great conservation movements taking place in Down East Maine, and these gents represent that, and we'll be discussing some of the various projects that are underway, and I think you'll find it interesting and exciting. Right now, though, it's time for Outdoor Digest, brought to you by the Northwood Sporting Journal and Maine Outdoor Publications. And once again, want to remind you that the Northwood Sporting Journal is now recruiting for some part-time sales folks. If you have an interest in part-time work, we'll train you and give you a generous commission. And if you're interested, you can call the office and ask for Vic during the week at 732-4880. That's 732-4880. Just a couple things, Bob, from Outdoor Digest before you do your fishing report.
Mm-hmm.
We had a guest last week from Ducks Unlimited,
right?
And they asked me to remind us and every folks at home again The big banquet in Bangor is taking place this Thursday, September
20th. Oh, that's coming right up, yeah.
That is. And it's out at the Bangor Banquet and Conference Center out there on the Hogan Road.
I know where that is, yep.
And it's a big night.
Out off Union Street. Can't miss it.
If you've never been to a DU banquet, they have some fantastic live and silent auctions.
Yes, they do.
And they have all kinds of wildlife prints, decoys, guns, knives, furniture, hunting equipment.
Paintings, a lot of paintings.
A lot of paintings.
Beautiful paintings.
So anyway, if you're interested in that, you don't have to be a duck hunter to go. It's open to the public. Tickets are for sale. And you can call Tom Duff at 989-6082 if you're looking for an advance ticket. Or if you're shy and you don't want to call Tom, you can check it out online at www.ducks.org, and you can pick up an advance ticket.
Come early
online.
So you can mix around with people.
You bet.
And a wonderful meal, so they say they always do anyway.
Oh, fantastic chow.
I guess.
Big filet mignons.
Oh, my.
Lobster thermidor.
You going?
Hmm?
You're going.
I don't know.
You don't know?
I'm not sure.
Take Di with you?
There's one in Ellsworth I've been thinking about.
Oh, yeah,
I'm an Ellsworth boy.
There you are now. That's true.
I'm a little provincialized. I may go in Ellsworth.
Should go to that, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, don't forget the banquet. And last week we had a little controversy, and I think Jim and I think Scotty and you had some questions. I tried to get Jim Fahey, Warden Jim Fahey, to come on and explain the concealed carry permit and the concealed carry law in Maine and how it might affect anybody who's in the Maine woods who's hunting. Couldn't reach Jim. I tried to get him, couldn't reach him. But I did some study, did some homework, and I think I have this right. If I don't have it right, please don't hold me accountable, okay? But this is what I think is the lowdown on the concealed carry. Maine now does not require a concealed carry permit. You all knew that, right, Scotty?
Yes.
Okay, you don't have to have a concealed carry permit. However, if you go to another state which has reciprocity, and there are a few, like Florida,
yes,
New Hampshire, and you want to carry a concealed handgun, you can do so, but you need a concealed handgun permit from the state of Maine.
Which I have.
Okay. So if you go to Florida, you're good. If you go to New Hampshire, you're good. If you go to Massachusetts, you're in big trouble.
Mm.
That's what it boils down to.
Yeah.
So that's part of it. The other question people have asked last week was, well, let's say I'm hunting deer and I'm up in the North Maine woods somewhere, and I have a handgun concealed in my vehicle that's loaded. Mm-hmm. You're allowed to do that under the Maine law, okay? The only stipulation is if you are stopped by a game warden and you don't have a concealed handgun permit, then you are obliged legally to advise the warden that you are indeed armed and that it's loaded.
Right.
If you have a concealed handgun permit, you're not required to do that.
I didn't realize that
there
was that differential.
Yeah.
Now, I have a concealed permit from Florida, which has reciprocity.
In Maine, yeah. So does that answer your question you had last week?
It does, but what if you're not hunting and you don't have a hunting license, but you are, you know, in the woods, on a woods road, or even walking your lines and you have a concealed weapon?
You're entitled to do that.
And you're not hunting, so...
Yeah, as far as I know, I mean, if there's a game warden listening, you want to call up and say something to the contrary. The way I understand it, under the Maine law, you have a right to carry that concealed gun, it loaded, in your car, whether you're hunting or not.
Yeah, and on your person, you know.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yeah, okay.
That was my question.
Yeah, well, that's the way I understand it, and I'm not a lawyer, and I may have it wrong, but I've read it and reread it, and that's the way I understand it. So if anybody knows anything to the contrary, give us a call. At what number, Bob?
1-800-966-1039.
And I think right now it's time for Bob's favorite music.
There you are. That's it, baby.
Yeah.
Big boss fast.
Yeah. Come on, Scotty, you can do it.
Yeah. This is my rock.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, everybody.
These are my
all right.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. What's going on in the fishing community there, Bob Lehman?
You know, I thought we'd talk about something not really different, but swaying a little from catching and releasing and all that kind of stuff.
All right.
Let's talk a little bit about fall season insect hatches. That ought to be interesting because... right now, there are all kinds of different types of insect hatching, and most of them are terrestrials. And look for terrestrials like grasshoppers, and if you tie in imitations to hoppers, What are the two colors you ought to look for in grasshoppers?
Orange and yellow.
Yes, right. That's right, Paul. You're right there. Good for you. And also beetles, ants, moths, anything else you put down as a terrestrial?
What do they call those things? It's right on the tip of my tongue. It'll come in. next week it'll
about
come
right in. Right in.
All right.
Okay, and on rivers and streams, mostly now, the aquatic insects would be caddis, late season mayflies, and, of course, some of the stonefly varieties. And a tip on that would be, if you're fishing late in the evening, say on a river,
right,
like Grand Lake Stream,
yep,
and you want to catch a salmon, you haven't had good luck all day, then I know you know this, you put on a dark gray, say a caddis, or even a black caddis as it gets darker.
You bet.
Towards dark.
Yep.
And it works really good.
Yep.
And another thing is, you know, I've seen you try it, you put on a spinner.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the spinner fly works real good. It looks like a mayfly that's spent.
Yep.
And is on the spinning around on the surface, dying.
Yep.
You might say,
yep,
spent out and dying. And they love those. Salmon love those, and so do trout. So that works really good as well. And another tip would be to use good fall finder flies like marabou muddlers of different colors, yellow, white. I like white. And if you fish in a stream late in the season, use that marabou muddler to find a fish. And then if they're not taking it, then you can always go on to your terrestrial, like a hopper or something, and maybe they'll take that. I know you guys was up to East Branch of the Penobscot.
Yes, we were.
And you did. You used...
You used a parachute caddis.
Parachute caddis.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's a fly up there, that dry fly up there that they use mostly. Do you remember that? A hackleback. Hackleback.
Yeah, I've heard that.
Yeah, that's a really good fly up in that country.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nancy's Prayer.
Yes, that's, yeah.
That's a great caddis imitation, yeah.
That's another good one.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and you guys didn't have great luck, but you caught some. You caught some,
yeah,
even September.
Scotty caught a real nice fat one.
And is your lake warming up or cooling down?
Well, you know, I had a friend from Massachusetts who's a fishing fanatic, so I took him on a branch. Was it yesterday?
Yeah,
yesterday. He wanted to fish just to get out and wet a line.
Well, there you go.
We caught a couple of bass.
Sure.
Stripping with a woolly bugger, black woolly bugger.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I went trout fishing this past week, and of course, there's no water in these moving streams, so we put the canoe in a beaver flow, just one right after another, and we didn't do a thing.
Yeah.
I mean, just nothing. There was no rises.
Yeah.
The weather was beautiful. It was rainy, cloudy, gray, and cool. And it's the only decent day that I call good fishing day the last 3 weeks.
Well, maybe
and
Florence will Florence will swing this way and drop a couple of inches.
I hope so.
Yeah.
I hope so. I'm praying for that.
All right.
Thank you, Paul. That's my report.
Okay, great report. Thank you, Bob.
Thank you.
All right, if you joined us late, again, our guests are from they're from a Down East Maine Land Conservation Movement. Tom Duffiff, Mark Berry, and Hans Carlson will be with us right after we take the first break here. But while we before we take the break, we have an outdoor trivia question. If you know the answer to this question, my wife will make sure that you get mailed a Tony sharpener, which is worth about $16. So here's the question. When would a fall turkey hunter be required to wear two articles of hunter orange clothing? When would a turkey hunter be required to wear two pieces of hunter orange clothing? If you think you have the answer, you can give us a call at
1-800-966-1039.
And we'll be right back. You stay with us. Okay, we're back with Maine Outdoors, and we're looking for an answer to the trivia question. We want you to tell us, on what occasion does a turkey hunter have to wear hunter orange? Do we have any calls coming, Scotty?
Yes, we have Mike here on the line.
Okay, Mike, good evening. You're in Maine Outdoors.
Hey, how you doing tonight?
Fine, sir. How about you?
I'm not too bad. I'm actually driving back home from down east right now.
Oh, good for you. What do you think the answer is, Mike?
Well, you know, I'll be honest, I'm not a turkey hunter, so I'm not sure exactly when the seasons would go, but the one thing that would pop up in my mind would be maybe youth deer hunting day.
Youth deer hunting day. Yeah, I think I'll buy that. Yeah.
True.
Yeah, it's any time during the firearm season on deer, required...
I knew that the kids and obviously the father or whoever's taking the kid out has to wear two articles of orange because they're out deer hunting.
That's correct. Yeah, anytime you're deer hunting, whether you're hunting turkeys or snipe or whatever, you have to wear a blaze orange, right?
Yep.
Yeah, good. That's the right answer, Mike, and you've won a one of my Tony sharpeners, okay?
Hey, I appreciate that, Paul.
All right, I think you'll enjoy it. Diane, my wife will mail it out to you first thing tomorrow, but we will have to have your mailing address, so if you'll stay on the line, Mike, Jim will get your address, and we'll make sure you get the knife, I mean the sharpener, okay?
I guess he's gone.
I guess he's still there, right?
As a matter of fact, you lost him.
Okay.
You ever been?
We lost him. Mike, if you get a chance, Mike, we've lost you accidentally. So if you call back in, Jim will be standing by to get you. We need your mailing address so we can send you your prize, okay? We appreciate that.
You ever been snipe hunting?
Well, I know it's a joke.
Sure, but no, it's no joke.
I mean, there are snipe.
Yes, there are.
But I know that's an old... Yeah.
It is an old joke, too.
An old
it's
joke.
An old joke, but there are snipes. Yeah,
right,
I know.
Right.
We could go on, but nevertheless.
Yeah. Okay.
On to the show.
All right. Let's get down to business here. Gentlemen, again, great to have you aboard. And let's start with you, Tom Duffus. Tell us, you represent the National Conservation Fund. What's that all about?
Yeah, well, tonight we're here to talk about the Maine Coastal Forest Partnership, and the Conservation Fund has played a role in that, in partnership with these other organizations you're going to hear from tonight, the New England Forestry Foundation, the Nature Conservancy, and Blue Hill Heritage Trust. But the Conservation Fund is a national land trust that works with nonprofit partners, land trusts, and also public agencies all across the country and here in the state of Maine to help protect, conserve the priority properties, landscapes that for conservation, a variety of conservation purposes. We've been working in Maine for about 30 plus years and have protected over 430,000 acres with partners and about 8 million acres nationwide. This project here, we had an opportunity, we as the Conservation Fund, a nonprofit, we had the opportunity to buy a big chunk of landscape down east. And working with our partners here in the room and elsewhere, figured out what the priorities would be. And some of the land we were not interested in as a group. But what ended up happening was the Conservation Fund, acquired almost 18,000 acres of land in three blocks in eastern Maine. We're holding that property, and we're working with our partners here to raise the money, the permanent money, to go into the ground and help permanently conserve these lands for the public and for public access and conservation, which these fellows will describe here. But the Conservation Fund is able to hold these properties while that is going on.
And you do this in other states around the country?
All over the country, yeah.
Yeah. Where do you get your funds?
Well, we have we're called the Conservation Fund for a reason. We have a pool of capital, like a bank, that we are able to dip into on a temporary basis. It's a restricted funding that comes in from donors, corporations, and foundations, individuals. Over the past 35 years, we've amassed quite a bank there, and we're able to dip into that, use that on a temporary basis on behalf of our partners, and buy the land, own it, manage it. We keep it on the tax rolls, and that buys time for the money to be put in place, because landowners who are interested in selling their land may not want to wait the time period that it takes to raise the money.
Okay. So you bankroll this thing, and then these local groups pay you back, Conservation Fund back.
That's right.
Interesting. Wow. Do you do any work with the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation?
We do, out west primarily, and we also recently did a project in West Virginia and another one in Pennsylvania. They had some role there with reintroduction of elk on large forested landscapes that the Conservation Fund purchased on behalf of the state and helped them with the reintroduction, and then the permanent funding came in, will be taken out of that.
Wow. Yep. Yeah, I'm a member of that, and they do some great things.
They sure do.
They're just in the forefront of protecting
Well, you
habitat.
Mentioned Ducks Unlimited earlier, and we've been very active with them in Canada and also in the prairies of the U.S.
Yeah. So these three different blocks of land we're going to discuss today, they're owned by the Conservation Fund.
That's right.
Right now.
That's right.
And so now these local groups are going to try to raise some money to pay you guys off.
Yeah, well, we're all in this together, so we're pitching in as much as we can as well.
Yeah. Okay. Let's talk about these specific pieces of land. Let's start with you, Mark Berry. You're the Forestry Program Director for Nature Conservancy. And looking at the map here that you handed me, one of the pieces of land that you're interested in is the Spring River Preserve. Do I have that right?
We're working with Tom and the Conservation Fund to acquire a property we're calling the Spring River Narragansett Forest.
All right, tell us about that.
It's about 14,000 acres in eastern Hancock County. It's directly adjacent to a property that the Nature Conservancy already owns called the Spring River Preserve. And many of your listeners may be familiar with the Donnell Pond Unit of Public Reserve Lands, Tunk Lake, Tunk Mountain. And if you were to sit on the top of Tunk Mountain and look north, you see Lead Mountain off in the distance north of Route 9. This property that we're working on extends about halfway to Lead Mountain from Tunk Mountain.
Yeah.
And it's a great landscape with a lot of cold water fish habitat and the tributary streams, Spring River, and the west branch of the Narragansett.
Yeah. When I was a kid, Dad and I used to fish Spring River Lake. And what a nice piece of water that was. I guess it still is. I've been there for years. Yeah, there's some nice brookies in there at one time.
We used to canoe the West River, as we call it, which is the Guagas.
Yep.
For years, a bunch of us guys canoed that, three or four canoes, and we caught a lot of trout. But we always went in May, usually about the third week of May, and we took out at DuBois.
Yep.
Oh, we put in at DuBois, excuse me, and we got to take a break.
Okay. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back. You stay with us right here on Maine Outdoors. Okay, we're back with Maine Outdoors, and before the break, we were talking to Mark Berry from the Nature Conservancy about this parcel of land that they're going to acquire, and it's called the Spring River Narragansett Forest Project. What's the price tag on this, Mark?
We need to raise about $6.5 million, and we've made a pretty good start on that, but it's a big project.
Yeah.
But we're excited about it. It's a real priority for us because of its habitats, because especially the aquatic resources I mentioned, the lakefront and the riverfront and streamfront. And it plays a role for us in helping to keep a larger forested landscape intact.
Yeah. And it's on the map, it looks like it's almost connected to the Donnell Pond Public Land Unit, but it's not, right?
It just barely is, actually. Yeah. But what it mostly connects to is property that the Nature Conservancy already owns, which is about 10,000 acres on the north side of Tunk Mountain called the Spring River Preserve.
Okay. The my wife and I had intended last year, never got to. There's a nice hike up to Tunk Mountain there.
Great hike. I've actually done it a couple of times this year.
Yeah.
There's a good trailhead that the Bureau of Parks and Lands manages right on Route 182, Blackwoods Road. Yeah. And
I think a couple of old duffers could handle that.
Yep, but the second half of it gets pretty steep.
The
first half is a real gentle hike through the woods, rough trail, but gentle terrain.
Yeah.
Goes to a couple of beautiful little ponds, and then you hit the foot of the mountain, and it turns straight uphill.
It's steep, does it?
Yeah.
Okay.
As long as you're ready for that, you'd enjoy it.
All right, great. Well, that's a beautiful area down there, and it's exciting that you're getting ready to preserve that. And so do you have any time limit? There's quite a bit of money you have to raise.
It is quite a bit of money, and our partnership with the Conservation Fund gives us some time, and part of our process is reaching out to our supporters and new supporters, but part of our process is also working on some foundation proposals and some public funding grants, like some wetland conservation funding, and those things always take a while. And
okay,
so we've made some good progress, but we've got a couple of years to go.
Okay, so the funding package is a little complicated. It comes from all different types of sources. Yeah,
it does. Yep.
Yeah.
We can use all the help we can get, and we look to everything that's available.
Yeah. Do you have any message you'd like to put across to folks listening tonight with regard to that?
Well, certainly, if they're interested, get in touch with us.
Send money, right?
Sending money is always appreciated, and support of these kinds of projects is generally tax deductible, whether it's our project or Hans's project or the one that the New England Forestry Foundation is working on. These are a good cause, and they help to keep these places open so people can use them.
Are there any other significant scenic pieces of land that the Nature Conservancy have been involved with in Maine?
Yeah, lots. So,
what one would stand out in your mind?
Well, the Nature Conservancy has been very active in Maine for a long time. We've actually been involved with conserving 1.7 million acres. Our largest properties that we manage are about 160,000 acres on the upper St. John River.
Yep.
So a lot of your listeners would be familiar with. Maybe you've done the canoe trip on the upper St. John and some fishing up there. The Debskenegg Lakes, south of Baxter State Park.
I thought that was a public lands unit there.
There's Baxter State Park, and then the Debskenegg Lakes is the Nature Conservancy, and then there's a Namakanta unit of public lands.
But so, Debskenegg is not part of the public land unit. It's a Nature Conservancy.
Yeah, it's about 46,000 acres that we manage there.
Oh, I see. That's a beautiful area, too.
Sure is.
Yeah. All righty. Well, let's not ignore Hans here. He's behind my computer, but I can peek and see him. Hans, tell us a little bit now. The third parcel, we talked about Spring River Narragansett Forest, and there's another one called Venture Brook Forest, and that fellow is not with us to talk about that, right?
Right, and that's a couple of thousand acres over by the Denny's River that the New England Forestry Foundation will be acquiring from the Conservation Fund. And it's a great forested property where they're going to be sure to maintain. There's a very popular snowmobile and ATV route through there that they're going to maintain, and also a sustainable forestry program that will really respect and benefit the water as it flows downhill towards the Denny's.
Okay. All right. So there are those three parcels. The National Conservation Fund purchased those three parcels. Mm-hmm. And was it $8 million total?
Well, it was the total project cost with all of the costs that go into it is about $8 million bucks. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, and then Hans's piece is way to the west there in Blue Hill, Surrey, Ellsworth area.
Okay. And on that note, let's switch to Hans.
Sure.
This is the Meadowbrook Forest, Hans. Tell us about that.
Yeah, we're calling it the Meadowbrook Forest, and we're about 2,000 acres as well. The property straddles the Surrey-Ellsworth town line. It's a beautiful piece of property. It has the headwaters of Patton Stream, or a lot of the headwaters of Patton Stream on it, so it feeds water down into the bay there. Some of your listeners may know that there was a big alewife restoration project on Patton Stream, so this feeds water down into that. And interestingly, we were talking about dry streams earlier on the program. The streams are there's so much wetland in that forest. The streams are still running there. It's really actually good to see, given how dry it's been. So we are conserving this property for the wetlands. They're coastal wetlands, which are sort of something, they're getting to be kind of a rarity, even in down East Maine. And we're conserving it for various kinds of sport and recreation as well as managing it for long-term forest health.
One of the things I learned, because the closer you are to something like that, I think you tend to get more interested. I live near there, so I'm always curious. But I know the Blue Hill Heritage Trust has been on our program before, Bob.
Yes, I have.
And when you were on, I was intrigued by how many different parcels you have all pieced together here. How many total acres does the Blue Hill Heritage Trust now manage?
When this project is completed, which we hope to be done later this year, that's our goal, we will have about 11,500 acres under conservation on the peninsula.
Okay.
Some of it in easements, but quite a lot of it, about 7,500 acres in actual property that we own, which is open to the public.
Yeah. In fact, after we talked with you, my wife and I did one of the hikes, and I'm trying to remember. What's the one that goes up to Blue Hill Mountain?
Up Blue Hill Mountain.
Yeah, yes. That was a nice hike.
It's a beautiful.
Nice
hike
up there. Beautiful.
Yeah, and that was one of the conserving land on Blue Hill Mountain was one of the first things that the trust did.
Oh, was it? Yeah.
Along with the town owns Blue Hill owns some of the mountain as well, and we own quite a bit of the rest. Okay.
What's the price tag? Now, this is 2,000 acres down there in the Meadowbrook Forest. What's the price tag on that?
The whole project will be just shy of $700,000.
$700,000, okay. What does, this is kind of a general question, any one of you gents can jump in, but I'm just curious, when you crunch all the numbers, what's the average price you guys are paying per acre for this? And does it jibe with the market? In other words, what's it figure out? Any idea what you're paying per acre? Have you ever crunched those numbers?
On the Blue Hill Peninsula, it really varies, because if we're conserving forest land like this, we're, you know, the market value of that is much lower than if we're, you know, conserving a piece of property on Egamogan Reach.
Oh, it depends.
Yeah, it really depends on what the market.
Yeah.
As all land trusts, really are. We'll, you know, only can pay fair market value for properties. I mean, it's part of what we, you know.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you have any idea what you're paying per acre?
I don't have an exact figure. One of the things that I'd say is that part of the model here of working together on these multiple projects that all came from the same landowner originally is to have the opportunity to purchase them more at a larger scale, and you can end up with a better price per acre when you're buying a larger property.
Sure.
But as Hans said, we are all constrained, and we are, whenever we're making a purchase, we're going out and getting an appraisal and making sure that we're not paying more than the property is worth.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
You love camping on this territories?
It's somewhat variable across our properties. Depends on the property, but our larger properties, there certainly is camping, like up on the Debskenegs and the St. John. There's a lot of camping.
I see.
Yep.
All right.
Who takes care of the campgrounds?
Well, we get some help on the St. John from North Main Woods, because we're within that larger system. So they actually manage campgrounds on the St. John River in partnership with the other landowners up there.
I see.
And the Debskenegs, that's our responsibility, and we take care of them ourselves and have some seasonal staff that help with that.
Well, who would they have to see if they wanted to go in and camp out?
Probably best thing to do would be to just go to our website to learn more about it. And so that's nature.org.
Nature.org.
And then look for Maine.
Yep. Okay.
I want to talk a little further about this thing on value, land values. I have some other related questions. But right now, Bob Lehman is itching to do a commercial to make some money for us and the radio station.
Yes.
Well, we don't get any of that, though, do we?
We got to say a few words about our really wonderful sponsor.
Okay.
Been with us for how long?
General Appliance and Brewer.
Yeah, that's the baby. And they've been with us for how long?
Oh, 20 years, I
guess. They're one of our original sponsors.
They are. You bet.
They are. And they're located right over in Brewer. Right on Center Street, and it's easy to find. The General Appliance and Brewer. Go across the old Bangor Bridge, take a right and a left, and they got practically the whole block over there. Used to be Perkins Supply, and now it's General Appliance and Brewer. And they're a family-owned business since the 1920s. How about that? And in these changing energy times, General Appliance is there to serve camp owners with non-electric appliance needs. And General Appliance services use propane appliances and sells parts for all makes and models, including the well-known Servel gas ranges. And as for compost toilets...
Ride the wave, baby.
You know it, baby. These are the wave of the future, you might say. And, you know, one thing about compost toilets, Paul, did you know that they have no running water, and they have no plumbing, no septic, and no leach fields?
No mosquitoes?
Well, I was getting to that. And no environment problems. And along with what Jimmy says, no mosquitoes. And they're great to put in your camp. I mean, put them in a closet. Don't take up hardly any room at all.
Put them in the closet?
In a
closet. Sure, what about odor?
It's called water
closet. No problem. There's no problem with odor.
How do you know?
Well, I've used them.
You have?
Yeah, have you?
No.
Well, you want to try it sometime. Well,
should I go over to Al's and try one?
Yeah,
don't think I will. All right. So anyway. General Appliance and Brewer.
General Appliance and Brewer. You can find them real easily, as I said.
If you want to call Al up, it's 989-3714.
Thank you, Paul. That's perfect.
All right.
Okay.
Good job.
Thank you.
General Appliance and Brewer. Now, they've been our sponsors, and we all patronize them. Right, Scotty?
Yes, we do.
And we encourage you to do so as well. All right, back to our guests now. And again, we encourage you to call if you have a question. A number to call. What's our number, Bob? I can never remember that dang thing.
Our number or their number?
No, our number.
1-800-966-1039.
Okay.
And you have to dial a whole number, even if you're local.
All right. And they're listening to us right now on the Voice of Maine News Talk Network, 101.3, 103.9. And what's that frequency down in Rockland? I can never remember that. 95.4, right? 94.1?
What is it, Jim?
95.1.
95.1. Okay.
FM.
All right. Yes. Voice of Maine News Talk Network. Mm-hmm. Okay, gentlemen, I want to pursue this value question a little bit. One of the things that the cynics say, and they don't say it as much as they used to, but I know there are people probably at home now wondering about this and thinking about this. They say, well, you know, it's a wonderful thing to protect land, but when you do that, don't you take that land out of the tax base? And doesn't that mean that when you do that, that my taxes go up? And what's the story on that? Is it? Have you ever heard this?
Yeah, I've heard that, and it's not not always accurate, especially here in the state of Maine with a great tradition of the land trusts that I think something like 98% of
go ahead
98% of the lands that they hold are on the tax rolls or payments in lieu of taxes. But two things about this project, the Conservation Fund, we're a nonprofit. We're paying taxes, and that's going to carry on with these other groups in one form or another. I want to come back to your value question, though, and say that this project was possible because we had a land seller that really wanted to see this happen and was generous and helped out. And it's a Maine family. It's a logging family in the state of Maine, and we owe them a debt of gratitude for helping kickstart this project. So that's,
can you mention?
Well, I think I want to keep their privacy, okay. But I think your listeners can probably guess by now.
Okay.
But anyway, these guys might have something to say about the taxes there, but this is really about maintaining the traditions in the state for hunting and fishing and conservation of our forest lands, and in fact, in some places, restoring them back so they really fully function like the wetlands that Hans is talking about.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd be happy to add to that. For the Nature Conservancy, it's a very similar approach. So as I mentioned earlier, we have lands all across the state. Some of those are in organized towns. Much of it is in unorganized territories. But the approach varies property to property a little bit. Sometimes it depends what the previous landowner had been doing. But generally speaking, those properties stay on the tax rolls, or we make a payment in lieu of taxes of a comparable amount.
Oh, okay.
So they're not taking land away from those municipal budgets, or
you're not compromising the tax base by doing it.
Right.
Well, you pay tree growth tax
on lands that we're actively managing, like the St. John. They're under tree growth. Some others are under open space.
Will there be cutting allowed on any of this? The Spring River Narragansett Forest?
There will. There'll be a portion of it that we'll manage as ecological reserve, as the Donnell Pond Unit and our adjacent property each have some ecological reserve and some that's available for active management, and that will apply to this as well.
Oh, I see. Okay, we have two callers backed up. Let's take the calls right now. Good evening, caller. You're on Maine Outdoors. Go ahead.
Is that me?
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
All right. Hey, this is Larry Balkin down Jonesport calling, President of Pleasant River Fish and Game.
Yes, Larry.
Oh, okay. Hey, I just want to say thanks to these guys for the work they're doing, and, you know, I think we all need to recognize how important this is, because Washington and Hancock County comprise the last relatively unspoiled 100 miles of land on the eastern seaboard of the entire United States. And, you know, we've got one chance at this. We can be the ones who mess it up, or we can be the ones who hand it down to the next generations. And, you know, thank you so much, guys, for what you're doing.
Well, Larry, for my part, you're welcome, and thanks for all that I'm sure you're doing, because you just spoke very eloquently about the value of these places, and I'm sure you're doing a lot of good work with the Fish and Game Club.
Now, you guys didn't pay Larry to call in, right?
No, we didn't.
We did not.
Yeah, that's a wonderful testimonial, Larry, and that's a good point you make. We're talking about that. I think, Tom, I think you mentioned that this is the last bastion of unspoiled forestry on the eastern seaboard, coastal-wise, right?
Right, they're not making any more. This is all we got.
Yeah.
This is we are so blessed to have the North Maine woods come right down to the ocean, this part of the state. And I also want to mention that these lands are going to be under management continually. And what's really interesting of what Blue Hill Heritage Trust did, they actually added an employee, a forester, to their staff now to take care of their properties. And I think that's really great. We talk about jobs.
Over the last couple of years, we've all of a sudden acquired two really substantial pieces of forest property, and we needed to have. I come out of a land management background, and I knew I needed a forester to look after these properties properly.
Do you cut any of your lands?
We have not traditionally, and these forests will be managed with the idea of cutting trees in the future. It's going to be a while before they're ready for that. Yeah. And then let me just add in on
you
on
guys
that
aren't opposed to responsible cutting of land, right?
Absolutely not. I'm a woodworker.
Good for the wildlife.
It's good for the wildlife. You know, I'm a woodworker, and I use wood, so you got to get it somewhere. And let me just say that, you know, to add on to the previous question there, Blue Hill Heritage Trust keeps all of its land on the tax rolls as well. Almost all of it is in open space. And
that's good to know. Are you still there, Larry?
I am.
Yeah. Any other comments?
No, not really. Just keep up the good work, guys. That's it.
Yeah. Larry, we appreciate your call in, and it was very timely. We appreciate
it. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah, Paul, one of the things I wanted to mention is that this is a great project here in the state of Maine, and this is one of these places in the country where we have an opportunity to deal with what the Conservation Fund believes is one of the most pressing environmental and conservation issues facing the country, and that's the loss of our forest lands, which are so important for climate issues, habitat and access, water quality, and so forth. Maine has, I think, as the caller said, really a limited time really to make sure that we can keep our wood basket, keep the jobs in the woods, keep the forest managed, keep the forest protected and open for people.
Yeah. We have another caller standing by, right, Scotty?
Yes.
Good evening, caller. You're in Maine Outdoors. Go ahead.
Yes, hello. I'm from Adamasconis, Maine. A few years ago, Bald Archie bought some land from the Gardner Corporation, said that how good the gardeners were, and they did a good deal and everything. Well, it figured out for what Bald Archie bought, the Maine Trust.
You're talking about Governor Baldacci?
Yes.
Yeah, okay, go ahead.
$1,500 an acre. We got to be careful of what we're paying for these land trusts and the money, because the mills are down, these large landowners are going to sell the land, but they're asking five times what it's for. The Gardner boys sold that for $1,500 an acre, rape land up in the North Maine woods. You go back and check it. You got to be careful of what you're paying these conservancies for land and everything else.
Yeah, that was a good point.
It is.
Yeah, I don't. I have some vague recollection of that. The governor did get involved something with Gardner land folks.
I don't think nonprofits were involved. But
yeah, and that specific project doesn't have anything to do with any of us per se. But the caller's point about us being careful about value, that's something that's very important to us. And as Tom mentioned, you know, we're fortunate in this situation, and we're often fortunate that a landowner or a seller chooses that they want their land to go into conservation. They want to work with us or with other conservation organizations, and often they choose to contribute part of the value. And
they contribute, and then you have them come back and cut the land. So it's a win-win for them.
Yeah, that's not happening in this situation.
Yeah, again, that wouldn't be our situation either.
I wouldn't agree to a project like that.
Yeah, I can't speak to the project that the caller is referencing, part of our process is to have appraisals done of all properties, and on this project it also included a timber inventory so that we knew what we were.
Who would cut the timber?
Well, the Conservation Fund owns this land now, and we are putting together forest management plans for at least two of the parcels. The third one is well underway there, and when the time comes, you know, there'll be a harvest, and that'll help cover the cost of the project.
It will be put out to bid.
It'll be put out to bid, absolutely.
Yep. Yeah.
And then I guarantee you the landowners that sold it to you would get the contracts.
Well, we just don't know at this point.
Well, we appreciate your call. We're not cutting you off. But I want to tell you that I know for a fact that Governor Baldacci is a regular listener to this show. So, John, if you want to call in, give us a call at 1-800-966-1039. I'll give you a chance to protect yourself on that, Governor John.
All right, thank
you guys. Okay, appreciate the call.
Thanks, Scotty.
Okay. How much time we got left there, Mr. Engineer? A couple minutes?
Yeah, about About 3 minutes.
About 3 minutes. Okay.
3 minutes.
Did we cover pretty much everything on land values that you wanted to talk about? All right. I think some good qualitative responses there, and a nice call from Larry there at the Pleasant River Fish and Game Club. Okay, what thoughts do you have to leave for our listeners tonight with this Down East Maine conservation movement? Before you answer that, I wanted to make a point that whenever I drive that down there, I go down to fish with Bob down to Grand Lake Stream. Whenever I drive that Route 9 and I see that piece of beauty down there, I often thought, it's too bad Roxanne Quimby hadn't bought all that instead of some of the fir thickets she bought up north. That is a fantastic area, but you probably don't want to get into that.
No.
Any parting thoughts for our folks at home?
Well, I guess for me, I'd pick up on part of what Tom was saying earlier. Maine has an extraordinary resource in our forest, in the streams and lakes that are sheltered and protected by our forest, and in what they contribute to the Gulf of Maine. And, you know, it's our generation that has a chance to influence the future of Maine for all of the people who live here, all the people who visit here. And taking care of some of these places and keeping a timber industry going is part of how we keep that forest across the landscape.
Yeah, Maine has a long tradition of conserving land. It goes back, you know, a century or more, and it's one of the reasons why this place is the way it is because of that long history of conservation. And we have a really special place here, and there are ever increasing pressures.
Yeah. And bless you guys for the good work you're doing, and we'll keep tabs on you, see how things go with your projects. Thanks for being here. We appreciate it.
Thanks
for having us on.
And great job by all. Our guest next week is going to be Barry Higgins, who runs Maple Lane Farms. He's a processor of wild meat, and he'll be here to shed some light on that.
That'll be interesting.
And we'll look forward to being with you next week on
Maine Outdoors.